Simran Sethi, welcome to SBS Punjabi Radio. How are you?
Thank you. I'm wonderful.
Now, if we talk about environment, our surroundings, our food, we can see that if we don't change our attitude towards a climate in the next 5 to 10 years, we'll see some very profound effects in our food system. Now, what I would like to know is what we as individuals can do on a daily basis, which will help postpone these adverse calamities, if not stop them altogether.
I think the idea of stopping them altogether may not be possible. We're really now in a phase of trying to mitigate greenhouse gas emissions and move toward what we call climate adaptation. So as far as what we can do as individuals, I would say the number one thing we can do is start to look at what we eat, how we eat, and where it comes from. So if we think about the decisions that we can make just in our homes immediately. And so if you're going to eat meat, and I will say I'm one of those people, just to remember, you know, I mean, I am Punjabi after all, like 36% of the calories that are produced by the world's crops are being used for animals. And only 12% of those calories are ultimately contributing to the human diet because meat is very inefficient as a food source. But if you're going to eat it, try to eat wild meats that are hunted, or even a partial shift from consumption of meat. But if you're eating beef, if you move toward pork and chicken, we could feed an additional 357 million people right now by reallocating the land that we use for grazing animals and for creating that feed towards growing food for people. And a shift to, you know, even if we'd simply shift from a non-meat diet that still includes eggs and milk, we could feed right now an additional 815 million people. So that, just in terms of our diet, is one thing we can do. In terms of what we actually do once we have the food, is start to be really conscious of waste. In our modern agricultural system, we have created a lot of cheap food, which is why now, for the first time in human history, overweight people outnumber underweight ones. So the percentage of the people living in hunger right now has actually shrunk from 26% to 13%. And 870 million people are suffering from hunger, while 1.5 billion people are considered overweight or obese. But unfortunately, both groups suffer from micronutrient malnutrition, right? They don't get enough vitamin A or iron or iodine because the foods that they're eating, we're eating, are heavily processed. So even if you're eating a lot of calories, they might be what we call empty calories. And so what we want to do is start to pay attention to the kinds of foods that we're eating. And then finally, to think about where waste is going. Because this processed food tends to be very cheap and very energy dense, but not necessarily very nutrient dense, a lot of people feel a lot more comfortable about throwing a lot of it away. So, for example, in Australia, people spend $158 billion on food, but they throw as much as 20% of it away. And then meanwhile, according to Food Bank, 2 million Australians are struggling every day to put food on their table. So this is the equation that makes no sense. We're throwing food away while people are hungry. The kinds of food that we're eating that are making us overweight and obese aren't healthy foods. So we're what, you know, author Raj Patel calls stuffed and starved. And then meanwhile, you know, we're making really bad decisions and then worrying about feeding people. But if we just started to make more mindful decisions about what we're eating, where it comes from, do we really need to drink that Chilean wine or that wine from California when we have amazing wine in the Yarra Valley? You know, like, these things don't make any sense. They have status attached to them, but they aren't sustainable in the long term. And now more than ever, we have to start to realize that all the decisions we make, especially the ones we make about what we put in our mouths, have really huge implications, not just for the planet, not just for greenhouse gas emissions, but for the well-being of people all over the world.
So you're currently working on your book about loss of agricultural biodiversity. Now, we have been seeing certain varieties of fruits, vegetables and greens becoming vulnerable to a changing climate, are persistent on using pesticides, or expectation of getting any food in any season. Now, you have just given an example of wine. Now, my first question is, who is to blame in this mess we have created? Is it our governments, the big companies, or we the people? And secondly, how can we get out of this mess? Is there a clearer, simpler solution to this?
I want to remind everyone that when we talk about industry or we talk about the government, it is we the people that have chosen to put those kinds of people in power. We voted these people into office. We support industry with our money every single day. And it was most interesting to me when I interviewed the head of the Convention on Biological Diversity. So this treaty, the CBD, is what kind of set the tone for what we're looking at now in terms of the preservation of agricultural biodiversity. And what he said to me when I interviewed him is, Simran, if we lay all the blame at the feet of the corporations or the governments, then we give them all the power for the solutions as well. And I think that, to me, was a critical turning point, because we all put ourselves in this problem together. When we chose to go to, you know, McDonald's instead of choosing to support a local restaurant, when we chose to, you know, buy all of our food in the grocery store, when we know that there are farmers markets, gorgeous farmers markets in Melbourne, where we can support local farmers and buy our food very nicely. And the solutions to these problems belong to every one of us. So I would say our demand for cheap food has strained and constrained both farmers and food systems. And so what we must do is reconsider our relationship with our ecosystem and our understanding of what it means to eat well and what it means to be nourished. So no, I wouldn't say there's a simple solution, but I think the solution is one that's delicious and really, really important, and that is to make better decisions about what we eat and to eat in a way that increases biodiversity. According to the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations, we have 80,000 edible plant species, but we only grow about 150, and 95% of our calories come from just 30 species. So everything is undergirded with wheat and with corn and with potatoes, and we need to start thinking about eating in a way that's more interesting. You know, going to a farmer's market, for example, and looking at a vegetable and saying, I have no idea what that is. I have no idea how to cook it. Let me ask. Let me find out. Let me start to appreciate what's grown right here in my backyard, rather than demanding that food be shipped out of season from all over the world. So the problem starts with us, and the solution ends with us.
So to finish off the interview, I would like to talk about you again. Now, you're very passionate about environment. You have lectured all around the world, literally talking about environment, sustainability and social change. What has been your experience like if we talk about making a change? Are people interested in making a change? Do you think it's possible to make a change for good in the next few years, or do you ever feel discouraged?
Well, if I think it wasn't possible, then I should really just go back to bed. But there are days, I'll be honest, when I don't feel like getting out of bed. And I remember there's this woman, this amazing woman named Sylvia Earle. And she is an oceanographer. She's in her 80s now. But she was the first woman to walk untethered on the ocean floor. And I interviewed her, I guess now about 7 years ago. Maybe 6 years ago, something like this. And I said, you know, Dr. Earle, 90% of our fish stocks are depleted. Like, what can we do? How do you find hope? She looked me in the eye and she said, it's the other 10%. You know, like, that there's still something left that we can transform. And, I mean, I really can't tell you enough what a turning point that was for me, because we still have time. The changes that we've seen that have started with the Green Revolutions that have become even worse, you know, through the introduction of transgenic technology, this, you know, DNA technology that has created so many genetically modified kinds of foods. There may be a place for GMOs in our food system, but it's not in every place, you know, and that we're going toward the solutions that may not be healthiest for us, but that we can transform, that we have a voice, that we have financial power, that we have more opportunity to access information than at any other point in history. If you have access to a computer, you can learn what's going on in the world, and you can connect with other people who care. So for me, I would say I absolutely have hope. I have also great discouragement in certain moments, but what I have not lost is hope, because I know all is not lost. I have the great privilege and opportunity to meet people every day who are fighting for healthier oceans and cleaner air and better, more delicious food for everyone. And these are the people who get me out of bed every morning.
Well, let's hope all of us listening to you get the hope by your wordings. So it was really nice talking to you, Simran, and we wish you all the best for all your future projects. Thank you for taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you very much for the invitation, and wishing you all the best as well.